Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the You Should Run podcast. I am your host, Tony Heil, a Bridgeport council member in Bridgeport, PA, in Montgomery County. And I'm a little bit far from Montgomery County, right next door in Chester County today, actually, talking with a new state representative, Representative Danielle Freelotten, for the You Should Run podcast to discuss why you should run for office. That's the whole point of the podcast. If you haven't listened before, I encourage you to go and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or on our Podbean site, and like us on Facebook and Twitter, and let us know what other guests you'd like to have on, whether it's as a podcast or part of the blog, even of activists, for the You Should Organize blog with some questions about people who are getting involved in the political process, because every person makes a difference. And one person who is making a difference in a lot of ways that she probably didn't expect a couple years ago, maybe I'm wrong, is my guest today, Danielle Freelotten, new state representative in Pennsylvania, part of a new wave of freshmen. There's always a new wave of freshmen, I guess. But we're excited to talk about her experiences and the challenges and the opportunities of being in office. So, Representative, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, we have not met before.
No.
Interacted on social media.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you've been on social media before, but it's a whole new thing when you're a state rep.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and why you decided to jump in the game and run for office.
Well, I am a mom of two kids, 5 and 3.
Oh, they're my kids' age.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, obviously, as you know, nobody has more at stake in our kids' future than we do right now. And with what's been happening, not just in our country, but for me specifically right here in my own neighborhood, we are just seeing the egregiousness of when corporations are running our government and the government is no longer formed by the people. And so I stepped up to run because our family has been dealing with the Mariner East Pipeline project for the last 4 years. And we started organizing as a local community. Literally started on my neighbor's back patio porch talking about what are we going to do? We have to stand up and do something about this. And we created an organization called the Euclid Safety Coalition. We started by getting two of our neighbors to step up and run for our township supervisor seats, so similar to the seat that you hold. And we successfully flipped our board of supervisors for the first time ever in history. And I always say, not just to Democrats, but to people-focused, environmentally-focused Democrats who truly are committed to being a voice for our community. And it has made a difference. Mm-hmm. And after that election, I was asked to step up and run for State House.
Something you had probably not thought of doing before.
Never.
Now, for people listening, I imagine a lot of people don't know what this Mariner East issue is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something, had you been environmentally conscious of things before that? Or is it something that, like, once this happened in your neighborhood? Can you give a little bit of background about what that means?
Well, so I've always said, like, I'm an environmentally focused person. I have been a host of a CSA at my house for 5 years. And I, you know, I've always recycled and done all the things that you're supposed to do to be a good steward of the environment. And never in my life did I expect to experience how important protecting our environment is until Mariner East came into my life.
Mm-hmm.
Mariner East, when we bought our house, there was a pipeline 2 doors away from us. There was an 8-inch and a 12-inch pipeline that were there since the 30s. So they're 88 years old.
There's a lot of old pipelines all over
everywhere.
Everywhere. The water pipes in our borough are like from before Woodrow Wilson was president.
Yeah. And so these are old infrastructure. When we came to the community, I don't think they were even active. I don't think they were even in use. They used to carry heating oil from the east to the west. And in 2014, Sunoco purchased those easements with those pipelines in them. And they reversed the flow and repurposed those pipelines to carry natural gas liquids from the fracking fields of the Marcellus Shale to the port in Marcus Hook. And natural gas liquids are ethane, butane, and propane. Primarily ethane is the product that's going through the pipes. And the reason that ethane is such a commodity is because it is the core ingredient of most plastics and styrofoams and petrochemical products. And so they're shipping this ethane from Marcus Hook to Europe, because in Europe, places like Scotland have banned fracking because it's bad for the environment. And so they can't get ethane out of the shale in Europe, and they are now purchasing it from the United States.
So places that are quote-unquote environmentally conscious are still part of this whole process. Yes. Because, well, okay, we're not doing the bad stuff. We're just taking advantage of it all.
Right. We're not fracking in our own communities, but we'll let somebody do fracking in their community, and we'll buy the product from them.
It's kind of like we have laws against child labor, but we're probably buying some things that are made by kids
right.
in other countries.
Exactly. So the danger of ethane versus petroleum products that heat homes is that ethane is odorless, it's colorless, it's heavier than air, and it is 5 times more explosive than the traditional natural gas products that you and I are familiar with
wow.
for our whole life to heat, that we use for cooking and for fueling our cars and things like that. And so these pipes are under a tremendous amount of pressure that they were never designed to be put under. And they're 88-year-old pipes that they've repurposed and reversed. And so in addition to that, they're adding 2 more pipes to the same easement that are, you know, the original pipes are 8 inches and 12 inches. The new pipes are 16 and 20. So they're creating it, I call it an industrial superhighway for natural gas liquids directly through high consequence areas like Exton and East Goshen and West Whiteland and Thornberry and Edgemont and places that we know and love and have family that live there. And
these are all like beautiful communities. I've lived in Exton many years ago and I've been around here many times. Lots of homes, lots of single family homes. Yes. Like there's a lot of young people, obviously, with your kids. And mm-hmm. like there's a lot of families in this area. Yes. It's not barren wasteland by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, and the scariest thing is that if there were to be a leak on one of these pipelines, the product behaves differently than traditional natural gas. Traditional natural gas would try to dissipate into the air, but natural gas liquids, because they're heavier than air, will collect in a cloud, and they'll collect underground, and they'll spray out of the pipe like an aerosol can. They're going to try in a traditional natural gas situation, the pressure in the pipe and the atmosphere will try to equalize, and most of the gas will stay inside the pipe. Whereas with natural gas liquids, because of the nature of the gases, they want to escape the pipe. So they're going to try to escape the pipe. They'll come out like an aerosol can, and they'll collect on the ground. Now, if that happens out in a rural area, you know, the chances are you're going to see that before it finds an ignition source.
Right.
If that happens here in a neighborhood like mine, you know, a neighbor down the street or next door may think it's a foggy morning and go out and start their car, and there's an ignition source. Somebody could start their grill. Somebody could start their lawnmower. And, you know, the number of ignition sources within close proximity to these pipelines here in these high consequence areas is incredibly high. In addition to that, you can't use an ignition source. You can't use your car to get away. They say not to use your doorbell or your cell phone, which there's debate over whether that's legitimately a major concern. But regardless, you want to avoid all ignition sources. So the advice is to evacuate on foot upwind by 500 to 1,000 feet. So we think about that for people like you and I who have small kids. That would be a difficult thing to do in an emergency situation, to get your kids to like get themselves together and run upwind. Who would even know which direction that is? But then when you think further about that, how many of our neighbors are elderly and don't have the ability to run or right. move quickly? How many of our neighbors are disabled? Who may not even have the ability to be on foot or to, you know, get out of their home without assistance.
Right. And so many disabilities you don't even notice. So right. someone might just have asthma or, you know, some other condition where they look. So there's more people with disabilities than you realize.
Right. Exactly. And these pipelines go, they're out in East Goshen. This pipeline is going literally in front of, like within feet of a retirement community and assisted living facility. So imagine trying to evacuate an assisted living facility with elderly patients who are not mobile in the event of an emergency with one of these pipelines. It's sheerly impossible.
Well, especially when you see when a hurricane comes and they do evacuate hospitals and nursing homes, they do it with at least a day in advance. And
right.
That's with hurricanes, you don't get that much time still, but that's more time than you would get in this situation.
Yeah, and they still have trouble. I mean, how many times have we seen on the news with the water rising in a nursing home that they're trying to evacuate and things like that? So we have this threat. It's a new threat to our community. And what has happened is because the pipeline was given public utility status, that preempts local government. It also puts our school districts and our local emergency response agencies out of their statutory requirement, out of compliance with the statutory requirement to have credible emergency response plans and a early warning and detection system. We don't have any of that.
So, like, to someone like me hearing this, and I'm only hearing one side, but, you know, I'm more inclined to agree, which is why we're talking to you. But to skip ahead to other part of the podcast, one of the challenges is you're a state representative now. When you go to people who are in charge of committees or, you know, in government, do they just not see it? And I don't even name names.
I won't name names. They acknowledge, everybody I've ever talked to acknowledges these things as problems.
Right.
Most of them present the roadblock of being the Marcellus Shale Coalition and the lobbyists that own the caucuses and put the stakeholders who put the pressure on reps to keep these things out of the legislative process. And so there are numerous bills within the legislature right now to address these issues, but without a chairman who will push it into their committee and actually get it out of committee and then send it into another committee that'll move it to get it onto the floor, we're really in a position of major roadblocks.
It's, to me, like, I can understand, I'm in politics, I haven't been bribed yet, and there's not a lot of bribery going on in the local municipality,
right.
Sometimes there might be, but, and I don't think that that's pervasive all up in everything, but I can understand a lobbyist saying to me and convincing me about, like, home construction and some, like, a coding thing that might not hurt people, but you're talking about something that could blow up a nursing home. Like, to me, like, it would take a lot of stuff for me to be
okay with that.
Yeah.
I think that the strategy is to focus on people that aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, every Republicans and Democrats up and down the line in Chester County and Delaware County are all on the same team on this.
Right.
This is a regional bipartisan issue. This is not
here.
A party line issue here in the Southeast. But when you go to other parts of the state who benefit from fracking, who feel that there are jobs to be had with this and who can't actually see it. I say this all the time. I invite people to come to my home all the time because once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And when you actually see it and you know the person who lives next to it, it's impossible for you to not have some level of concern and empathy for the people that are going through that, so unless you're pure evil.
So you've made this offer. Has anyone taken you up on the offer?
Actually, Jordan Harris is coming today.
Okay.
And Joanna McClinton's coming on Friday.
Oh, good.
So
good.
We do have some Democratic leaders that are coming out. I invite everybody to come and see my district and see what's happening here and to understand why I feel so strongly about these issues.
It's kind of like the story with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got invited to go to a mine. And she's like, yeah, I'll go. And they're like, I didn't think you were coming.
Right. Yeah.
So that's really the motivation that got you into this.
Yeah.
And you saw, and obviously there was some winning with the flipping of seats to people who were pro this and that. Winning encourages more running and winning, I assume, right?
Yeah.
What were the challenges, because you'd never run before? What were the things you had to, like, learn or that you weren't expecting were a challenge necessarily? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that there's a system in place for how things are done, and it's easy to get dragged into that system, even when you know that, like, in your gut that there's a different way to do it. And so I actually did things very differently than the traditional way, and I actually was successful with that.
Clearly, you're here.
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm here big. And people, I was just saying this morning, people still to this day stop me in the hallway and say, I can't believe you're here, because nobody thought I could win the seat.
Yeah.
Nobody thought I could win the seat. And, you know, I just took a different approach to it. I didn't spend, you know, 10 hours to 20 hours a week on the phone doing call time to corporate donors and lawyers and people that are going to try to influence my decisions in Harrisburg. And the beauty of that is now I'm free to represent my constituents and my community. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, to many, many grassroots organizations, we were able to raise the money to run our race through small dollar donations. You know, we had one article, like one media piece that went out just prior to the election, where we raised $35,000 in one weekend in $1 to $3 donations.
That's a lot.
Just from, yeah, it's huge. It's
for
huge.
This kind of race. Yeah.
And so I talked yesterday, actually, at Tuesdays with Toomey, and I shared that when I was doing research into my opponent, one of the big motivators to running was that the companies that are actually putting this pipeline in, there are three of them, specific, like three high level names. There's a lot more too, but the three most egregious names were on her campaign finance report every single cycle. They made regular deposits into her campaign fund, and they were only for $500. And I'm like, so my family's health and safety and our home that is our greatest investment is worth that little bit of money. Like, you're going to sell us out, and you're going to sell us out for peanuts on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it was a regular donation every cycle, multiple times
a year.
So
it adds up.
It adds up. But,
and it almost doesn't look as bad when it's $500.
Exactly. And so what somebody pointed out was there were 50 people there yesterday, and she said 10 people donating $10. Or no, $5, right? 10 people, $5? No, it's $50.
Yeah, 10, so, if you get 10 people giving, yeah, that would be $50 of us.
So it was 500. She broke it down to 500. Right. So here I am showing my inability to do quick math. But so she said if 100 people gave $5,
right,
that you are a lobbying force.
Mm-hmm.
So if 100 people give $5 to a candidate that is willing to be a voice for their community, that makes a huge, huge difference. And my race was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I do remember following on election day, seeing who was going to win. There's always a surprise here and there. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, a number of people said, well, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like, they were happy, like, people were happy for yeah. you, but they had heard good things about you as a person.
Right.
But I know that there were all these other races, because there's 203 state representatives, mm-hmm. so there's all these targets and whatnot. You know, I just had a conversation with Congressman Brendan Boyle,
mm-hmm.
and his thing was that he ran when he wasn't supposed to run. You know, wait your turn and whatnot, and he right. didn't. And I think that's a lesson I'm learning from these podcasts is don't wait your turn.
No, don't wait your turn. And Brendan Boyle and I actually went to school together from nursery school on to high school.
Oh, good.
That? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to... That's a good connection.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Childhood friends. We must have learned something at yeah. a young age.
And obviously both working on some of these same environmental
yes.
issues. So a challenge. So what did you do with your time then? You didn't spend all day making
I knocked doors. Yeah. I got out and knocked doors. Our race knocked... we knocked over 100,000 doors by the end between our campaign, the coordinated campaign, and then Conservation Voters had an independent expenditure campaign mm-hmm. going that they also knocked a tremendous number of doors for our campaign.
I think people don't realize, I mean, that sounds like a lot to anyone, but for a race, for a state legislative race, that's huge. I saw some races where they put up on their board that they were hoping to knock 10,000 or 30,000, which is still a lot
yeah.
for 100,000 knocks.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
And I think it makes the biggest difference. When somebody actually meets you in person, you have a much greater chance of getting them to show up at the polls, mm-hmm. first of all. But having that impression in their mind, and I find all the time, like, lots of Republicans, but this is a 35% Democratic district, so I wasn't supposed to win.
Mm-hmm.
We have a large population of independents and obviously a majority of Republicans, and when you meet people as their neighbor, I think it makes a big difference, and they see you as one of them. I always say when somebody can see themselves reflected in their government, they're more likely to be active in it. And so we talk all the time about how, you know, Democratic voters have been lazy in the past, and I don't really find that to be true. I think that Democratic voters haven't seen themselves in their candidates.
Yeah, and again, that's something we were just talking about with Congressman Boyle, because
right.
he said, you know, there's a half of Congress is a millionaire, and they might a lot of them might be nice people, but there's not a
exactly.
lot of working class people.
Right.
Maybe not a lot of moms.
Right.
So, and that's another challenge. You said something you're working on is encouraging more moms to run.
Mm-hmm.
One of my first podcasts was with Mayor Jenna of Royersford, and if you're listening, hope you check it out. But she's a young mom with two kids, well, with one kid, one on the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be two. And it is very hard when you're a new parent, mother or father. So,
mm-hmm.
but we especially need moms, because they're
right.
often told, like, there's a lot of pressure to not do something like this.
Wait till it's time. Wait
till your kids are in high school, and by that time, you're working on the next thing.
Right.
So, what does that mean to you? What were the challenges, and why was it important to you as a mom to do it?
Running as a mother is very difficult. It's not an easy task, so it's not for the faint of heart.
Nothing is easy to do as a mother.
No. And it takes a very high level of boundary setting, of organization, of energy to make it all happen, but it's worth it, and this is why. It is incredibly evident to me when I sit on that house floor why some of the things that frustrate us as parents are a problem. Why the cost of childcare is just so outrageous. I mean, the biggest expense most working families have is childcare, which has become what has made us the working poor in the middle class.
Right. I mean, my wife and I sometimes go through our budgets. And she's like, oh, we're struggling. I was like, no, we're in good shape.
Right.
And our childcare is more than our house. And we don't have expensive childcare. Like, ours is the most reasonable one for a place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the cost of childcare is really, truly taxing families to, you know, the point of just constant pressure. Mm-hmm. And the inability to get ahead and save for the future for your kids to go to college or for your own retirement.
It's so hard to,
So why are things so hard for middle-class families? Mm-hmm. Because middle-class families are not in the legislature. They're not. Right. I mean, you don't see a lot of young mothers, young fathers who are sitting in those seats making those decisions. And the world is a lot different now than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when a lot of the people who are in elected office were bringing up children or dealing with saving for retirement. And, you know, the days of, I talk about healthcare all the time, you know, the healthcare for state representatives is like, you know, the Rolls Royce of healthcare. And on the first night, one of the first nights we were there, went out to dinner, and one of my colleagues made the comment, like, did you see our healthcare package? And I said, yeah, you know what? I think it's really interesting and tells the story of why our legislators aren't so motivated to do anything about the rising cost of healthcare, because they're oblivious to it. Mm-hmm. Because our healthcare is what, when I was a little girl, my dad was a Teamster, and we were able to go to the doctors for $5 for a doctor's visit, and our prescriptions might have cost $10 or $15, and you know, we weren't dealing with $3,000 deductibles and $600 a month worth of co-pays and the things that people today are dealing with. And the legislature's health insurance looks a lot more like what my family's health insurance looked like when my dad was a Teamster when I was a little girl. And so I just think there's such a lack of connection to what people are really dealing with, what working families are dealing with. And it's not even necessarily a lack of like care. It's just they don't understand it. They haven't seen it. People have rising co-pays. What does that mean? People have outrageous deductibles. Well, to them, what does that mean? Because they're not facing the same pressures. And so I think that we need to have more people who are living through these challenges in the legislature able to understand what's truly happening in our landscape.
So that sounds like one of those challenges you see, and opportunity.
Absolutely.
And something, probably one of your top issues, is just getting everyone to see the world around them. That's a hard thing to do. And one of the reasons I think it's a hard thing to do in government is just because everyone's got 500 different things going on. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it's a challenge, especially as a new representative, to kind of put the world in someone's face that's not seeing it. They might be a good person. It's just like, well, I'm the chair of this committee and I have 30 issues I'm working on this week and I can't come to Exton. What are you talking about?
Exactly. And I think that's the challenge in every aspect of life, right? To get people to care about the things that you're thinking about. Mm-hmm. I worked in marketing prior to being in the legislature, and that was my job, was to get people to care about things that they didn't maybe know about before, or to move the public's opinion.
And a lot of people's jobs that they had before being in the legislature were not that kind of job.
No.
If you're a car salesman, you might just get them to care about cars maybe, or if you're good jobs they may have had, but weren't about that.
Right. And so many of the people, that's the other reason why we also need diversity in our legislature. Mm-hmm. We need people from all walks of life to run, because so many people in the legislature are lawyers. Mm-hmm. And so they really understand criminal justice reform and they get it with corporate law and things like that. But they're actually not dealing with things that you or I may have dealt with in our careers. And so for me, I actually today, one of the people that came in to meet with me about youth mental health was one of my professors from Westchester University. And I studied kinesiology in college. Mm-hmm. I went into business after, but studied kinesiology. And so we were just talking about this whole youth mental health issue and things that when I, 25 years ago, was studying wellness and health, that, you know, aren't reflected in our public schools that were the cutting edge back then. Why didn't these things ever happen? And it's because we didn't have champions. We never had champions at the state level that were pushing these ideas. And so we need champions from education. We need champions from healthcare. We need champions from the business community that are going to create a more well-rounded perspective in Harrisburg. Because I think, you know, we see certain things move, but we're not seeing a well-rounded governance happening at the state level.
And so is that your number one issue? Like, is that really an issue? Or is I'm trying to frame this right for the podcast, I guess. But yeah. So
what issue? Are you talking about mental health, youth mental health?
Well, yeah, mental health. Health, because you have a couple of things.
Yeah, so my number one, like, obviously.
And environment are the two big
things. They're my two biggest things.
Pretty big deals.
Yes. And I just said today, people are going to be really happy to hear me talking about mental health because they're sick of hearing me talk about the pipeline.
I mean, I'm okay with you talking about everyone. It's okay.
But the pipeline, obviously, the reason I ran is because the problems we face are at the state level. We need to make changes at the state level mm-hmm. so that communities like ours are not continuing to go through what's happening here in Exton. Environment. Obviously, along with that is a huge, huge, huge priority for me. I just became part of one of Penn Environment's initiatives for the Zero Waste PA package that we're working on. And I spent my day yesterday down in Southeastern Chester County Municipal Waste Authority learning about landfills and recycling and how all of our trash management works. And the bill that I'm working on is to reduce food waste. So, you know, my goal, and I come from the hospitality industry, and so I have a lot of insight into food waste and what we could do if we can change some regulations to redefine waste and make sure that food that is quality food that should be going to people who are hungry goes to people who are hungry instead of into landfills. And then also working on composting programs and things that just make organic waste more useful to our environment and to people. And so that's one of the things I'm working on.
That's exciting because you obviously care, and now you're in a position where you don't just care, you could get some results.
Right.
And that's really one of the most exciting things about being in office is maybe you don't pass that biggest bill, but maybe tomorrow's a better day because of what you did.
Right. Well, and I think just having the ability to have a platform to bring awareness to the things that you're thinking about mm-hmm. and building coalitions with people, because so many other people are thinking about the same things. You know, we may not move it in a week or in a month or even in a session, like in a cycle or a session period. But over years, we can move the ball forward. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that we're never going to move everything forward in one fell swoop. We need to do it a little bit at a time. And in order to do that, you need a lot of people pushing. So,
Well, you definitely don't sound like someone that was just elected with that kind of perspective.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's been 5 years of fighting, and I realized that, you know, in 2014, when this fight started, I never imagined the successes that we would have. And most of them have been small, but when you add them up, they're huge. Mm-hmm. And so you need to have that long game perspective to be able to really make meaningful change. There's lots of reasons to become discouraged.
Well, I don't want to be discouraged. One thing I do want to do before the end of this podcast is to encourage other people.
Yes.
And the name of the podcast, as you know, is You Should Run.
Mm-hmm.
You've given a lot of good reasons about why you ran, but mm-hmm. Why should more women run, more moms run, whatever groups? Like, why should people run for office right now in 2019 or 2020?
There's never been a better time to run. Yeah. I mean, I think our country is in a position of rethinking everything that's happening in our government.
I agree.
And so if you've ever even thought about it, this is a great time to get in there and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like I said, the perspective is so important. And we need every perspective. We need mothers. We need fathers. We need single parents. We need people of all races, all religions, all business backgrounds, or I shouldn't even say business backgrounds, professional or career backgrounds. We need landscapers and we need nurses. I mean, we need everybody at the table.
There's like two nurses in the legislature.
Yeah. And they're new. Right. They're brand new. So
I met with Senator Collette.
Yeah.
Who's great. And she spoke at a nursing press conference about staffing ratios. Yeah. And there's like no one else in the whole building who understands what she's talking about.
No. And now there is. Right. Because we have one more, Bridget Kozorowski, was elected in special election a few weeks ago. But we need people with perspective to step up and be a part of the conversation. Otherwise, like I said at the beginning, we are seeing the results of when lobbying groups and corporations run our government and we don't. And we need everyone. Dan Williams is a pastor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like we've got people from all walks of life.
It seems like it's easier from listening to you. It's easier for lobbyists. And we're all lobbyists in a way. I mean, I've lobbied. But it's easy for a corporate lobbyist or any kind of lobbyist to convince you, Representative Smith, not you, well, there is a representative Smith, so, to come to my side if you are totally ignorant of the whole issue.
Right.
So if we have more people who are aware of these things from those perspectives, it's harder to lobby someone like you to change your mind when you've lived it.
Exactly. Not only that, but I think so many people who are in public office, like, went to school for that. Like, they literally, like, grew up wanting to be in public office. And in some ways, that's good. But in some ways, that's not good. It can't be everybody. We need a mix of people. Like, I never, ever thought in a million years I would ever run for office. My former professor was in here today. And she's like, it blows my mind that, you know, I was studying exercise science 25 years ago. And here I am in the legislature. But that perspective is so important. And making sure it's a check. You know, like, there are people who go into public service because that's their dream in life. But there are people who end up in public service because they're called to do it. And we need both to make this all work.
Well, great. Well, I appreciate you making it work. I appreciate you making this work today so we could have time to talk and give me a lot of your time. I'm sure you're learning your time is very precious.
Yes.
So, and you got a lot of precious things on your wall with your kids and their constituents. So thank you, Representative Freeline.
Thank you.
Thanks for pushing all these bills. And hopefully if you're listening, you'll take a lesson from the representative here and maybe you...
Step up and run.
Step up and run.